So, what are you going to do when you're sequestered at home and suffering from cabin fever? We have some ideas on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by California Closets of Syracuse, creating custom storage solutions for all areas of the home, as well as in professional offices and commercial spaces. Learn more at californiaclosets.com or by visiting their DeWitt showroom.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. The coronavirus, known as COVID-19, is now a pandemic and causing major disruption to our lives in ways we haven't experienced before. With Americans and people all over the world being encouraged to practice social distancing, major events and cultural gatherings are being postponed and canceled. Concerts, movies, sporting events, you name it, canceled. It's requiring all of us to find other ways to entertain ourselves amid self-quarantine efforts. But you're in luck. My guest and I are here to offer a few suggestions on how to pass the time. He is professor of communications and rhetorical studies at Syracuse University, where he is has expertise in comic books, horror films, and pop culture, and it serves him well. And he is author of the book Projected Fears, Horror Films and American Culture. Welcome to the COVID-19 and Chill episode of Pop Life, Kendall Phillips, also known as Dr. Spooky. How you doing?
I'm good. It's the end of the world. Where else would I be?
It's the end of the world as we know it. Yes, it is. So we're going to be locked up for a while, a lot of us, maybe sneaking out here and there to the store, trying to hunt down the two most elusive things in the world right now, chicken and toilet paper. For some reason, we're going to be locked in. So we need to talk about ways we can keep ourselves entertained. So here's what's going on: postponed or canceled. James Bond: No Time to Die pushed out until fall. I was looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Festivals like South by Southwest, Coachella, postponed, canceled. NBA, rest of the season canceled. NCAA, basketball canceled. Major League Baseball opening pushed out. Don't know when. Disneyland and Disney World. Closed down, hundreds of local events and communities all over the country. So we do have some time to kill.
We do. They're even closing bars and restaurants, and Broadway's gone dark. So we are really looking at finding ways to self-entertain.
Yes. So pity the fool that doesn't have internet connection, I'll tell you. So it's a good time to discover some new content and rediscover some old. We thought we'd offer a few suggestions for movies, shows, books, just to help keep you sane. Now, there's a couple of different ways that we can go that I thought might be fun. We can double down.
Love it.
On the virus thing, on the pandemic. So we can talk about movies that if you are the kind of person that just wants to dive in headfirst into pandemic, we got some stuff for you. Then there's probably the person that wants to escape it all. So they want to find some movies where they can just not even think about this stuff. So in terms of double down, one of the movies I chose is a British film called 28 Days Later.
Great film.
Yeah, I love that. It stars, it's directed by Danny Boyle, and it stars Cillian Murphy, who plays in another one of my favorite shows from BBC called Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders, great
love
show.
Love that show. It is a show about Irish gangsters. And it also stars Naomi Harris, who plays Eve Moneypenny in the recent James Bond movies. And the plot depicts the breakdown of society following the accidental release of a highly contagious virus and focuses upon the struggle of four survivors, including the two I just named, while trying to evade those who have been infected. Now, the infection causes folks to become sort of zombie-like. And this movie, as I understand it, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, has been credited with reinvigorating the zombie genre.
Absolutely. It kind of brought back zombies. It made them scary again, and it added the fast zombie. So this rage virus that spreads turns people not into living dead, but into sort of berserker, almost indestructible, crazy people.
They're not trying to eat you. They're just trying to kill you.
Yeah, and then spread the virus, and so it spreads. And so a classic sort of contagion motif, but it really was. I remember I saw this film when it premiered, and I happened to be living in London, And if you haven't seen the film, there's some wonderfully spooky shots of London completely empty. And if you lived in the city, that was really disturbing because you never saw London empty. I mean, 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, there are people, there are cars, et cetera. But to see Trafalgar Square or the bridges just completely empty was really chilling. Mm-hmm. And then to see one lone figure running at someone in the middle of that was even more disturbing. So two thumbs up for 28 Days Later.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're the kind of person that wants to double down because you want to fantasize about what the breakdown of government and community is going to look like, this is a good one. Just when our stars, our heroes, I guess if they're heroes, think that they found safety in the confines of a compound that has some military personnel, we find out that those folks are just bonkers crazy.
Yeah.
This is a good one to give you an idea of what that breakdown in government, the inability to trust our neighbors is like. And I can't remember. I think the contagion starts to subside.
Well, there's a sequel called 28 Weeks Later that picks up the story after they think the virus has gone.
Okay.
It was contained in the British Isles. And they start to try to repopulate the city. And, of course, as always is the case, things go really wrong. In fact, I think the great advantage of the double down, which is focusing on horror movies, is that horror movies always remind you things could be worse.
Yes.
Right? They could be a lot worse.
Okay, so one of your double downs, and we'll talk about a lot of them, but one of them is one of my favorite films to watch in this genre, is a movie called Children of Men.
I can't really remember when I last had any hope. And I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
The ultimate mystery, why are women infertile? Some say it's genetic experiments, pollution. Why do you think we can't make babies anymore?
This is a really interesting
effect
of a virus in that it renders women or men, I can't remember who
I think
is.
It's mainly women become sterile and unable to have eggs. And it is a fascinating moment when you think this is not an infection that's killing people. It's just stopping future generations. And what happens to a society that no longer thinks it's living for a future? And it's a smart film, well acted. It's visually stunning. It really is a quite disturbing view of just a little bit in the future, like not super far in the future, but just a few years, a few decades advanced, and does give you a sense of what happens if you lose hope.
Yeah. Now, you could probably hear from the clip some recognizable voices. You certainly, if you don't know Michael Caine's voice, then you're not really into movies. So Michael Caine is in there. Clive Owen. Who has a recognizable voice. And then Julianne Moore is also in this movie for a short bit. I mean, she's taken out kind of early. I shouldn't spoil it. But if you haven't seen this movie, it's just really cool. So there are refugee camps that they actually have to break into. So what the plot is, there is a young woman who happens to be pregnant.
Yes.
This is a miracle.
Yeah, everybody wants her.
And everybody wants her for whatever political reason. Yeah. They want to sway public opinion one way or the other. And the people that she thinks are safe and there to protect her actually want to use her in some martyred way.
It's a little bit like people are treating Purell now. It's
yeah.
like the most sacred thing in the world. And everyone will get their hands on it and do anything to keep it. So.
And because of the worldwide pandemic of infertility, babies become super precious. So you see them mourning the death of the youngest person in the world. It happens to be 18 years old.
Right.
And they celebrate this person when they're alive, too, because they are the sort of the last hope. So very good movie. This is one that every time it comes on, I watch
great.
It.
No, Alfonso Cuarón is the director. Great visual style. I mean, you just immediately are wrapped into this completely immersive world, and it is really a masterful film and a good way of reminding yourself that things could be worse.
Yes. Another one of my double downs is one that many people, because of the popularity of the show early on, may have seen, but because the show has waned in audience since, may have ducked out. So it could be a good time to jump back in. And that is The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is a post-apocalyptic horror television series on AMC, if you don't know. It's based on the comic book series by Robert Kirkman. And it features a large ensemble of cast. A lot of the original cast are now gone.
True.
And there are new characters in there, but led by one of the more popular characters in Michonne, who is the samurai sword swinging sister, and a few others. And I would say that there was a lull in the middle of this. So we're at 10 seasons now.
And that seems about right.
Yeah, somewhere in 6 and 7, maybe 5, 6, and 7, things began to just go off track. And now they seem to have gotten back to the formula of the early successes. It's very still now. It's back to its gritty nature. It has a I don't want to spoil things. It has a pretty good nemesis villain. In the group that is threatening our group, the Whisperers, who are a group of people who live among the dead, by masking themselves in zombie skin and smearing themselves in blood, they're able to walk around and walk amongst them without being attacked. So they live out in the wild and have a problem with our heroes and heroines. Are you still watching?
I am. I have been a Walking Dead loyalist since the beginning. I made it through the farm season, which we called it the Talking Dead because nothing happened. I made it through the Governor's War. I made it through the Negan War. I am making it through the Whisperer's War. It has definitely waxed and waned, and there have been episodes where I was quite close to saying, I'm done. I'm finished. This is ridiculous. But I think it's the characters that keep me coming back. It's Daryl. It's Carol. It's Michonne, Maggie, although some of those characters are sort of zipping in and out of the show now.
Yeah.
I think it is the human drama, and it is the question of what would you – it goes back to the very first part of the series. What would you do to survive, and what would be left of you if you did it?
Right.
Like
right.
How much would you change if you really had to go out and live a very brutal – survivalist kind of life. And I think it's a great show to reflect back on where we are as a society.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons I recommend this show is because it's 10 seasons. And if we're in for the long haul,
you can spend a lot of time on that.
You can spend a lot of, there's a lot of content there to absorb. Actually, my daughter started from the beginning the other day, so I could hear her. She's 20, back, home off from campus. Looking for something to do. So she's watching this, and I could hear her screaming and squirming in the room. Those early episodes were really good.
So now
she's coming to me with a billion questions, and I'm like, if I answer this, it's going to spoil it.
Exactly.
So just be patient. But there's 10 seasons of this to get through, so you could kill almost your entire quarantine time just watching Walking Dead. So what else is on your double down list?
So for movies, I, as usual, try to go with some things that are maybe not quite so well known, but probably worth a look. In terms of zombies, which is a popular subgenre now, one that was actually filmed not far from here, down in the Southern Tier, was a horror film called Here Alone. Very low budget, but really well acted. And it is very much about one woman sort of trying to survive in the kind of tail end of a zombie apocalypse. So that's one I think is really, really good. Another I think is really thoughtful and maybe worth looking at now is an Irish film called The Cured. Hmm. And the conceit of the film is that there was a zombie, kind of like the 28 Days Later, but they've managed to control it. And the people who were zombies have now been cured. And the question of what would you do with those people as they come back? Would you trust them? Would you let them watch your children? Would you let them live in your house? Because there's always this fear that they could come back.
Right.
In terms of TV shows, again, I think, sticking with the Walking Dead, I was quite in love with a film, a series that was not everyone's cup of tea called Z Nation.
Yeah.
That was kind of a spoof of The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. kind of didn't take itself that seriously, was a little bit more campy and flamboyant and ridiculous, but it did consistently make me laugh in ways, particularly in seasons when The Walking Dead was really turgid and dreary and sad.
This is actually a way to get a little bit of both. You can double down and escape with
and have a little bit of fun with it, too. Yeah,
right. That's pretty cool. Now, another one of the Double Down movies that you chose was Contagion.
Yeah. So this is, again, I think the two probably most well-known Outbreak films is the Dustin Hoffman, Morgan Freeman mm-hmm. film Outbreak, which apparently is like number three or four on Netflix right now mm-hmm. because people are doubling down. But the other that I think is worth a look is Steven Soderbergh's film Contagion, which I thought took a very realistic look at what the consequences of a mass lethal pandemic would be and the ways in which society would eventually rebuild itself. So it's not quite end of the world, mm-hmm. not quite over-the-top melodrama, but it did seem to feel like kind of what could happen, and in some ways the early stages of the film feel like what is happening now.
Yeah, and one of the differences with the spread of this virus is it's spread by non-organic.
That's right.
Spread by fomites.
That's right.
So it's spread by, it could be like buildings or materials in a building jump from that non-organic material to humans.
Us, yeah.
Right. So that's an interesting one, I think, that is a little different from the sort of airborne and bloodborne viruses that
exactly.
spread. Exactly. Yeah. Moving on to escapism, there's a couple of shows that I recommend. One is it's going to be hard for me to evaluate because it's just running. Mm. And it's a show called Devs. Are you watching Devs?
I have not started it yet.
Okay. So Devs is a drama and thriller. And it is one of the shows that's a part of this new FX on Hulu. So I think it's produced by FX, but solely for the Hulu platform. So I don't think you can get this like on the FX channel. There's certainly plenty of profanity in it, which I love.
Great. I like that.
So I don't know if it's going to be on regular television. but it's directed by Alex Garland. And it started on March 5th. It's three episodes in now. And here is a little bit about Devs.
Forrest, your company didn't just take the lead in the quantum computer race. You demolished your competitors.
Whoa.
They have nothing. You have everything. And I have questions. What are you working on in the section of your company known as Devs?
The Devs program, it is a highly advanced quantum computing campus.
Lily is a highly intelligent encryption specialist who goes to investigate Devs, which she believes to be behind the disappearance of her boyfriend.
So you may have noticed the voice of Nick Offerman in there, who is, you know, lately known for sort of his dry comedy. But this is a really good character for him. He plays an eclectic tech leader, old hippie kind of guy. He's got long hair. And it's a bit of a mystery, so it's hard to get it's hard to talk about it at this stage of the show because there's still a lot to uncover. But it is a bit of a mystery. He seems to be obsessed with reaching into the past because I think he's lost a daughter. Mm. So there's like a 100-foot statue on his company's campus of a little girl, I'm assuming is his daughter. It's really creepy.
I mean, it's very creepy.
it's like she rises above the trees. And so
perfect,
you have this beautiful cinematography of drone footage or helicopter footage or whatever of this campus, and it's really cool. But the technology is really interesting. It seems to, and it still has to be uncovered, but it seems to allow you to project in the past actual events in this projecting images. So they can see images, video images, moving images of Jesus Christ being nailed up on the cross.
Wow.
They were looking at Marilyn Monroe having sex.
Hey, that's, of course, the first thing you
That's the first one you go
first
for.
First we'll do Marilyn, then we'll do Jesus to just feel better about ourselves.
There was a scene where they were sort of watching witches being burned at the stake.
Weird.
I believe it can project into the future as well, but one of their stated goals and models is to not do that. It's only look in the past. So it has implications, worldwide implications, to change, sort of everything about quantum computing and how we access the past. So it's a really interesting show. And Sonya Mizuno plays Lily Chan. So those are the two major characters. Her boyfriend was a Russian spy, and I don't think I'm going to be ruining anything. A Russian spy who was uncovered by the devs folk who was murdered by them. But to cover it up, they used computer-generated video to make it look like he burned himself.
Oh.
So really cool stuff. I think this is a really good one. It's edgy and allows you to escape everything that's going on around us now by getting into some other things that'll bother you.
Sounds kind of Black Mirror-ish,
yes.
Like a really extended episode of Black Mirror.
Right? Exactly. And then there is the return of Westworld, if you're looking to escape. I love this show. It's in season 3, and they're finally moving beyond the amusement park, which takes place in a Wild West kind of world. And I think everything that we've known from this show, and it is based on the 1973 film that I think starred Yul Brynner.
Yul Brynner, exactly right.
And a bunch of other folks. It's based on that film, and it takes place in a Western-like American West world where you can go play out your fantasies and all that stuff. And, of course, the AI goes off track, berserk, and starts taking over things. But now it moves into the future or into the real world.
Sure.
And I think we knew from watching the show that it wasn't a 2000s movie. It was sometime in the future, but they were very vague about when that was. And now we know it's somewhere 50 or 60 years in the future from now. It's got really good special effects, very good world creation, new world creation around this. And it's really a show about badass women.
It is. No, and I think for folks who haven't started it, I would say go back and watch it, and I would just say to most people, be patient, because the first two seasons are really complicated.
Yes.
They play with time and memory and where you are and when you are, and it would be very easy for someone to watch the first episode or two and say, I'm completely lost. I'm bailing on this. It's not worth it. We can attest it's worth it.
It is worth
Hang
it.
Hang with it. You get to the end. It actually asks some big philosophical questions about what makes you you.
Yep.
Like, why do you think you're a unique individual and you matter?
As these what is
intelligent
life?
What is life? These intelligent machines are starting to ask that question, why don't our lives matter? Why do we just live for your entertainment? And now apparently in season 3, they're going to get off of the Westworld entertainment island and out into our world, which seems the right place for them to be.
And it's a bit of a revenge show. They are seeking revenge and retribution. So it stars Evan Rachel Wood, Tandy Newton, and Tessa Thompson. So you have these very strong female characters.
Absolutely.
That are driving this. They've added to season 3 Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad fame, Lena Waithe, who is a writer and producer, and then football player Marshawn Lynch. So I don't know where that one's kind of out of the blue.
That perfectly makes sense.
I mean, he's doing a good job. He's not asked to say much. He provides a big body and a brooding force, but it works.
No, absolutely.
I'm just wondering, where the hell did we get Marshawn Lynch? I mean, there's a number of big actors out there you could have gotten to play that part. But you're right. Season 3 is the payoff if you have the patience to get through seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah. The first two are really, really complicated, but I think worth it even in and of themselves. But apparently 3 is where we're going to get past all the philosophical meandering and down to the dirty business of revenge.
Yes. What else is on your list?
So I got to say, when I think of escapism, I don't want to go to dark science fiction worlds. I go back. Like, I literally spent I spent hours down a rabbit hole of looking up 1970s kids TV Saturday morning shows that I remember just because. So I regress back to my childhood. And so one of those that I do think is worth kind of a bridge between your dark science fiction world and my desire to crawl back into the womb is the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. Now, if you're our age, you remember Battlestar Galactica as a somewhat cheesy Star Trek ripoff that was rebooted later by Sci-Fi Channel, and the series are now available on Amazon, into a very smart, very well-developed, enough throwbacks to the nostalgia of when I was a kid to make me smile, but enough smart, compelling science fiction escapism to make it all worthwhile. So yeah. I recommend, if you didn't catch that when it came out or if it just flew under your radar, go back and find Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, it is a, I'll be thrown out of Star Trek circles, but it is the, in my opinion, the greatest sci-fi series.
No, and partly because television. It ended, right? Yeah. So it didn't drag itself on to where it became irrelevant. It kind of had its story arc, and it got to a place, maybe ended a little earlier than it should have, but still it kind of has this wholeness to it. So you don't feel like you're just dragging yourself into endless reiterations.
And the villains, AI, again, here we go with artificial intelligence. I mean, while not the darkest series in the world, that provided some really edgy and scary moments. I mean, this is not your normal sci-fi series. It really deals with some heavy moments. Deals with death. Deals with the impacts of artificial intelligence and these relenting robots
that are also out for revenge, right?
That are just set out to totally wipe out.
Yes.
Human life.
So now you know we should all say thank you to our Siri every time you ask it something, because it might come back and get you. No, but I will say this about Battlestar Galactica. The thing that kept me with it is that every once in a while it would fall into what seemed like a kind of rote television show, 48 minutes, there was a little arc and whatever. But about every time I'd start to think, okay, they're just falling into a routine, it would hit me with an episode that I would say, oh, wow, I did not see that coming. I did not imagine that was a possibility. And so it kept moving in new directions that kept me fascinated. So that's, to me, that's a very bingeable series. You can sit down, even if you watched it, go back, sit down and watch that again.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to take a look at maybe some sports movies, since sports are being canceled.
Sports.
And perhaps you want to give your eyes a break from watching screens and looking at books. So maybe we'll talk about a few books that are out there as well. That's when we come back here on Pop Life. Welcome back to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee, along with Kendall Phillips, and we are talking about surviving COVID-19. This is the COVID-19 and chill episode of Pop Life. We talked about it earlier on. Major league sports are canceling seasons and postponing openings and all that stuff. So those that are sports fanatics are right now left with watching old replay shows, games on ESPN and maybe NFL Network and things like that. And I think having some fun with that. But I think another way to have some fun and remain in the sports world is to revisit some of the better sports movies.
Some great sports movies
that are out there. One of my favorites, and I'm going to suggest folks go back in time on this, go back to 1974.
Oh, wow.
And Burt Reynolds and The Longest Yard. So it's directed by Robert Aldrich, written by Tracy Keenan Wynn. It's based on a story by producer Albert Ruddy. The film follows a former NFL player who's played by Burt Reynolds recruiting a group of prisoners and playing football against their guards. It features many real-life football players like Ray Nitschke from the Green Bay Packers. And he plays a character called Paul Wrecking Crew, who is a former star football player who ends up in jail and gets caught up in this guards against the inmates kind of football game, in which the guards and the rule of law within the jail is all about having power, all about dominating the inmates who don't really have a chance against the guards, and so Wrecking Crew becomes sort of a catalyst to get a little payback on the guards.
You know how to play football?
Yeah.
Good. Would you like to play football with us inmates?
No.
Oh. We're gonna play the guards.
Yeah, I wanna play.
He wants to play. Thank you, Mr. Schachner.
Now remember, nobody hits the quarterback!
Lou! 28!
It's a really cool scene. So that's a scene of Burt Reynolds' character trying to recruit one of the more notorious inmates in the prison. This was actually shot in a prison in Georgia. Governor Jimmy Carter at the time played a role in getting that filmed there. And Burt Reynolds has some interesting stories to tell around this, particularly around some of the inmates were yelling at them.
Oh yeah,
at the time. But one of the things I like about this, even though it's shot in 1974, they really made an attempt to make it look like a real football game on the field. So they used multiple camera angles. I think used up to five cameras in a scene. To capture some of the movements. They did a lot of rehearsing of actual football scenes. The football players who were on set did a lot of coaching in that regard to make it really look believable that there was a football game going on. I'm assuming you've seen this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And people forget that Burt Reynolds was a college football star.
Yes, he was.
And I do think, particularly for younger listeners, people forget what a massive movie star Burt Reynolds was, and quite a good actor. I mean, probably people remember him more for dating Lonnie Anderson or Smokey and the Bandit. But before that, he really was in a wide variety of roles, Deliverance and The Longest Yard, and really incredible charisma on screen. It's easy to forget that. So I think going back and revisiting this movie is a great way to find a little escapism, to enjoy some sports, and to revisit a classic American movie star.
Yeah. When this movie was out and a lot of his movies in the 70s, that's when I was in elementary to middle school. So he was a huge star.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen all of those Smokey and the Bandit movies, all that stuff. I was a huge Burt Reynolds fan. But yeah, this was one of my favorites. The movie's been done probably two or three times since then. I know the Adam Sandler one was out not too long ago.
Don't watch that.
That does not compare to this one. So this is the one to watch. And there's a list out there of some of the top sports movies that you should dig around in. Do you have one that you like?
I think in terms of like a great classic older film, there are two. One is, if you want to cry, Bang the Drum Slowly, which is a baseball movie with Robert De Niro in a very young role, is a great, great one. But the one that I think is probably, stands the test of time as being an incredible story is Martin Scorsese's Raging Bull, which is also Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
It's a boxing, Jake LaMotta. It's as much about his life and his life falling apart as it was about him as a boxer. But there is something in American films about the boxing story. As much as Americans aren't as much excited about boxing as we were when we were kids,
right,
there still is something about that story of a guy getting a long shot and standing in the ring toe-to-toe and fighting for what he's worth. I think it's just the classic American story, and Raging Bull is probably the most artistically sophisticated version of that story.
Yeah, and I guess the opposite being Rocky?
I mean, it's
the Academy Award winner.
I'll say
though.
Rocky IV, but the first Rocky is actually, first two are actually really great films. Once you got to fighting the Russians, I think maybe we lost the plot.
Yeah. One of my other favorite sports movies, and I have a few of them out there, but one that I watch almost every time it comes on is A League of Their Own. And I think, it's wonderfully acted by a great group of actors and actresses. But it gives you some history. And before I saw that film, I knew practically nothing about women's efforts to keep baseball alive, keep entertainment alive during war efforts. And so it was a really good educational piece that acknowledges the contributions that women have made to not only the war effort, but to sports. So it is a comedy, but there are moments where I get choked up in there no matter how many times
I watch
it.
It's a great sports movie. No matter how funny it is, there's got to be a moment where you're rooting for or you're suffering for their loss or all those sorts of things. And A League of Their Own is absolutely a brilliant example of that.
Yeah. In terms of books, you have something that
Yeah, so I do think I'm on a campaign now because everyone says, oh, I would love to read more. I just don't have time with my commute and my blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, guess what? You now have time. So I have a couple of suggestions for folks who are wanting to double down and you're wanting to look at sort of a virus apocalypse. So two novels I'd recommend. One is Cormac McCarthy's The Road. That was made as a movie with Viggo Mortensen, but the book is really harrowing, and it is a novel set deep into the end of a kind of apocalyptic moment where plants have stopped growing and there's something like nuclear winter, though it's never really deeply explained. And you're looking at the kind of last moments of a father and son sort of trying to survive. If you want to stick with the kind of virus end of the world, Emily St. John Mandel's Station 11 tells the story of a virus that starts in Canada and quickly spreads as a global pandemic, and people are all trying to sort of find a place to be safe, and they end up in this little place called Station 11, and it's a compelling, brilliantly, wonderfully written film, or written novel. Highly recommend for the zombie folks. Two quick suggestions. If you want just down and dirty, ugly, icky zombie massacre, there's a wonderful author named Brian Keene who has a series called The Rising that starts with a portal being ripped in dimensions, and these evil things come in and start animating the dead. They animate dead animals. They animate dead everything. And it really is a brilliantly epic sort of apocalyptic story. For those who want a slightly more, say, maybe literary approach, Colson Whitehead, who folks will might remember from the Pulitzer Prize winning novel The Underground Railroad. The novel right before that, or maybe a couple before that, was called Zone One and is also set in a zombie uprising in New York. And it's absolutely brilliant. And the last of my End of the World series is a novel by a guy named Paul Tremblay. And it's called The Cabin at the End of the World. And it's probably one of the smartest novels I've ever written. It's dark. It's a little bit scary. But it combines all the great elements of a horror movie. It's a little bit home invasion. It's a little bit cult. It's a little bit End of the World. It's a little bit we're not sure what's actually happening. But beautifully written. And I highly recommend it. So those would be some. If you want to curl up with a good book about the end of the world, those are just a few of my suggestions.
I have one that sort of combines a little bit of end of the world as we know it anyway, yeah. And a little bit of my love for sci-fi. So it's a sci-fi trilogy. It's called the Wormwood Trilogy. It's written by Tad Thompson. And one of the things that really attracted me to it is it's a different setting. It actually takes place in Nigeria. And it's about an alien orb or something that lands in Nigeria. In a town, the town of Rosewood pops up around it. So it lands in the middle of nowhere. And over time, people come, they flock to this thing because it has some healing power. And like one of the books you just mentioned, also reanimates the dead.
Great.
So if you have ailments, you go to this thing and it opens up, I think, once a year and you get healed. And so over time, a town, and it's circular, so a town builds up around it. And our main character, Cairo, it works for the government, and he has he and a handful of others have abilities that connect to this alien being, and that they are able to see into what they call the Xenosphere, and can communicate. He has a special ability to find things. Mm. So if he met you and you were hiding something like money, he'd know where it is.
Oh my.
So the government uses him to find people and get information out of them as secrets. I've just started the third book. There is a war between or a conflict between the town of Rosewood, which is trying to become independent from Nigeria and the Nigerian government. What is slowly happening is this alien being, which you don't really connect with unless you have these abilities and can enter the Xenosphere, is slowly taking over Earth and almost too late for humans to react. So very interesting novel. I'm excited to see where the third is going to go, Rosewood Redemption. Then there's Rosewood Insurrection is the first, and then Rosewood. So very interesting book if you are interested in Nigerian culture and belief systems and religious theology and all this stuff. It brings all that stuff in. So it's a really good education into a whole different culture in the world. So that is the Wormwood Trilogy by Tad Thompson. T-A-D-E is how it's spelled. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Pop Life. This is the COVID-19 and chill episode. We hope that we've given you some good ideas to pass the time. But we certainly want folks to stay healthy.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
And donate to your local food pantry. Don't forget there are a lot of folks who can't easily stock up as some of us can. So as you're taking care of yourself, take a moment to think about, can you help some other folks?
Absolutely. And I think people are dying to know, what in the hell are you going to do as a professor teaching from home? How are you going to make this happen?
Well, I'm going to travel the country going door to door to all my students' homes. No, we're going to have to set up a podcast like this. So maybe I'll have Joe come in and we'll do CRS 287, the research methods class with Joe and Kendall, cracking jokes and telling you about how to research people. It's going to be difficult for the university, but again, our problems are relatively small compared to what a lot of people are facing.
Yeah. Well, best of luck with it.
Thank you.
And hopefully this will die down soon. We can all get back to our normal lives. But hopefully that we're providing you with some good information and some things to keep you busy and entertained. That's going to do it for Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. My guest is Kendall Phillips. I want to say thank you to our producer, Kevin Kloss. If you want to find more Pop Life, you can get it at WAER.org. You can also follow us on platforms wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, we'll see you then.